The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
You arranged a ceasefire, however fragile that may be. Those are major.
It's not fragile. It's a very solid, you know. I mean, you hear about Hamas, but Hamas could be taken out immediately if they don't behave. They know that. Mm-hmm. If they don't behave, they're going to be taken out immediately.
How do you get Hamas to disarm?
If I want them to disarm, I'll get them to disarm very quickly. They'll be eliminated. They know that.
You pushed the Israeli prime minister to make this deal,
yeah,
to get a ceasefire, to apologize to Qatar. Can you push Bibi Netanyahu to recognize a Palestinian state?
Yeah, he's fine. He's fine. Look, he's a wartime prime minister. I worked very well with him. Yeah, I mean, I had to push him a little bit one way or the other. I think I did a great job in pushing him. He's a very talented guy. He's a guy that has never been pushed before, actually. That's the kind of person you needed in Israel at the time. It was very important. I don't think they treat him very well. He's under trial for some things, and I don't think they treat him very well. I think it should, you know, we'll be involved in that to help him out a little bit, because I think it's very unfair. I did. I pushed him. I didn't like certain things that he did, and you saw what I did about that. I also stopped, you know, we knocked that out of Iran, and then it was time to stop, and we stopped. Iran wants to make a deal. They don't say that, and they probably shouldn't say, no good deal maker would, but Iran very much wants to make a deal. The key to Middle East peace, I made Middle East peace for 3,000 years. They couldn't do it. I did it. And I did it with some very good partners in Israel. But the key to the Middle East peace was knocking that out of their potential nuclear.
What is it that has gone on outside of the Middle East? My fear is that although Israel's been winning the war in the region, in the rest of the West, particularly here in America, to some extent we've been losing. We've been losing by the fact that we've seen the mainstreaming of support, not for Palestinians or for Palestinian statehood, but for Hamas.
To Tucker Carlson, I say, did you have a head injury? What happened to you? But you know what? Unlike other people, truly, I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't care why. I just know what you are. You platform these people. You deceive your audience. You lie to your audience. You become a full-blown, out-of-the-closet Jew hater. You know what he said? He said that he despises Christian Zionists more than anybody. More than anybody. More than terrorists? More than Hamas and Hezbollah? More than the Muslim Brotherhood? More than our great friends in Qatar? More than the Taliban? More than mass murders? Christian Zionists? He despises them more, even more than Jews? Christian Zionists? If you reject Judaism, you reject Christianity. If you reject Judaism and Christianity, then you reject the American founding based on the Judeo-Christian values and belief system. If you embrace Hitler, if you play footsie with Hitler, if you think Hitler's misunderstood, if you think Churchill's the reason we had World War II, if you think Churchill was the provocateur, if you think those things, I don't want to debate you. I don't even care about you. That's not a legitimate position.
We have the best, and I was the one that renovated them and built them during a four-year period. And I hated to do it because the destructive capability is something you don't even want to talk about. But if other people are going to have them, we're going to have them. And if we have them, we have to test them. Otherwise, you don't really know how they're going to work. And we don't want to ever use them. And in the meantime, I've solved 8 wars. The only one I haven't been successful yet in, and that'll happen, is Russia-Ukraine, which I thought actually would be the easiest one because I have a very good relationship with President Putin. But I brought, I mean, just a little list of look at this. wars. How many did I solve? Cambodia, this is Cambodia, Thailand, Kosovo, Serbia, Congo, the Congo, and Rwanda, Pakistan and India. That was going to be a beauty. They shot down 7 planes. Israel and Iran. You've heard about that one? Egypt and Ethiopia. That's another beauty. Ethiopia built a big dam where there's no water going to the Nile. Armenia and Azerbaijan. And if you take a look, Israel and Hamas, which is a, you know, rough little situation, but it's going to be...
I do want to talk about... I mean, you have branded yourself the peace president.
Well, I think I did pretty good.
We could put a montage like that together every single day. Yeah, we've got the nukes. We've got to, because everybody else has them. We've got to start testing them as well. We have the best bombs in the world. Oh, also, peace. Peace is breaking out everywhere. Look at it. I've got it all on a sheet. We've stopped 8 wars. There's only one more war to go before we have universal peace in this war-torn planet. In this planet where the proliferation of nuclear weapons, I mean, it has spread so far and wide that we could bomb the world into death and destruction hundreds of times over. This is, this is part of, really, I think, part of the paradox that Herbert Armstrong talked about. We're making all of this progress, and we can point to it here, 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 and here. But look, as he used to say, look at the appalling evils, all of the evil and the destruction. I'll get to the Sudan story follow-up here in just a second. But as I say, you could put that kind of package together every single day, and it tells quite the story. I mean, we can talk and talk and talk about peace and safety, but what does 1 Thessalonians 5 say, or Isaiah 59? When they talk about that, just know that sudden destruction is coming. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting here at the Trumpet Daily. You can get to the live video of this show at our Rumble channel. We've got a YouTube channel, and also, of course, our very own website, thetrumpet.com. And you can get to that live stream at our site, and also email the program if you like, td@thetrumpet.com. You know what's interesting? In the exchange with CBS and President Trump, and I've got more clips from that sit-down. It went on for, I think, more than an hour. But there was that section where she made a big point. Now, you've got to push Netanyahu. Well, I did. There were things he did I didn't like, and I pushed him. You notice they never talk about, now, can you push Hamas? I mean, I know he made the statements about, well, if I want to disarm them, I'll disarm them. Well, why haven't you done it then? This is a terrorist organization started in the 80s to kill Jews and to destroy the Israeli state. It seems like if it's that simple to disarm Hamas, to eliminate Hamas, I would think most people would agree on that. But that's the thing. Here's the rub. A lot of people support Hamas, and Douglas Murray brought this out at that conference. I think it happened on Friday. Mark Levin was there and so on. But coming back to the peace, when there is no peace, that's out of the Bible, by the way. Listen to clip 7.
Less than an hour before your meeting with President Xi, you posted on social media that you instructed the, quote, Department of War to start testing our nuclear weapons.
That's right.
Immediately. What did you mean?
Well, we have more nuclear weapons than any other country. I think we should do something about denuclearization. And I did actually discuss that with both President Putin and President Xi. We have enough nuclear weapons to blow up the world 150 times. Russia has a lot of nuclear weapons, and China will have a lot. They have some. They have quite a bit.
So why do we need to test our nuclear weapons?
Well, because you have to see how they work. You know, you do have to. And the reason I'm saying testing is because Russia announced that they were going to be doing a test. If you notice, North Korea is testing constantly. Other countries are testing. We're the only country that doesn't test. And I don't want to be the only country that doesn't test.
Isn't it amazing just how much talk there is about nuclear weapons all of a sudden? I mean, it's talked about often. The world is rearming. I've got a long story from the Telegraph about Germany rearming. All the detail, all the support that it now has at home, even in Europe. Europeans are saying, yeah, go for it. We need it. We need a strong European army. Why so much talk about weapons and nuclear weapons and sharing nuclear weapons, even as we're talking about ending war forever? I mean, how can you say there's more nuclear weapons than ever? And also, we have eternal peace. Also, you know, peace is breaking out, and we've just got one more war to stop. That would be Ukraine. And then everything's solved, I guess. This is from the Washington Post. Families gunned down as they huddled for safety, young children weeping over their mother's body in the desert, doctors seized for ransom and executed. Where is this happening? That would be the Sudan. I guess they don't count. Christians are being slaughtered in the Sudan. Such are the stories trickling out of El Fasher, the Sendent city conquered by the paramilitary rapid support forces on Sunday. The vast majority of people inside the city are still unreachable. Only a few traumatized people have been able to escape and testify to the horrors unfolding there. So here again, it seems like eternal peace. It doesn't last for very long. It's very short-lived. Have you noticed this? Even as we spread the proliferation of nuclear weapons, I mean, it's everywhere. And like I read to you last week, there's articles or books suggesting that soon it's going to be not 10 that have nukes, but 20 nations, and then maybe 40. Is that a sign of universal peace, of eternal peace? It's just the opposite. Because the spirit, like you see in Sudan, the heart, the nature of man, it hasn't changed for the better. It's getting worse. I think in that cold open, you heard Donald Trump talk about peace between Israel and Iran. Is that true? I mean, I know they've stopped the bombing campaign to get rid of Iran's nuclear weapons facilities, or at least a good chunk of them. But is there now a lasting peace all of a sudden between Iran and Israel? Well, just look at the rhetoric. Just look at the hateful, venomous rhetoric. Happens every week. Death to Israel. Death to America. Sudan's civil war, which erupted in 2023. I still can't understand why this one just doesn't count on all the list of wars that we've stopped, supposedly. After a power struggle between the head of the RSF and the army chief has become a sprawling conflagration, sucking in global and regional powers and leaving much of the country in ruins. The RSF is backed by the United Arab Emirates. Sudan's army has received weapons from Iran, Turkey. There's a lot of nations involved here. It's just like I read last week. You look at China supporting Hamas, supporting Iran. There's not a lot of peace in this period of eternal peace. Not when you look at what's going on behind the scenes and who's supporting who. It says now a war that has already claimed hundreds of thousands of lives. Well, this is on a scale that it certainly exceeds Israel-Hamas. Hundreds of thousands of lives? That's right. It's entered one of its darkest chapters. In other words, it's getting worse. The Washington Post interviewed 9 civilians, doctors, aid workers, and combatants in and around El Fasher who described a frenzied and indiscriminate campaign of ethnic killings and hostage taking by the RSF and allied fighters. Ethnic killings, hostage taking. It's happening on a mass scale. This has been man's history. This is 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 5. Verse 13, evil men and seducers wax worse and worse and worse. That's what's prophesied. And whether it's the dear leader, Barack Obama, or President Trump, saying the world's getting better and it's mostly peaceful. We've got to preach the same consistent message. What did Jesus Christ prophesy to occur just before he returns? That would be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of this age, nor ever has been. It's going to be the worst ever. And we've got to speak what Jesus spoke because it's the truth. Christ warned of this. And we're drawing near to the return of Christ. There's a subhead in this article, Death is Everywhere. It sure doesn't seem like eternal peace is spreading. Death is everywhere. 2025, here we are. All of these peace agreements. How significant is that, by the way, given what Neville Chamberlain did to pull a paper out of your inside pocket? Look at the peace we've created. Well, in fact, it's just a piece of paper. That's all that it is. It's not eternal peace. It's not a lasting peace. Not between Israel and Hamas, not between Israel and Iran. And then to make it sound like it would be so easy, fix Hamas, we could disarm them, no problem. Russia, Ukraine, that's coming next, no problem. So it's so easy. It's not easy. Because man's heart is corrupt. And his heart is on violence and evil continually, just like before the flood. Read Genesis 6. We've been through this before. History is repeating itself. Only this time, there are weapons strong enough to kill everyone on earth hundreds of times over. You just heard President Trump say that. What does that mean if there's that kind of weaponry and man's heart hasn't changed for the better, but in fact, it's gotten worse? A report from the Yale School of Public Health's Humanitarian Lab said images from Al-Fashir Former Children's Hospital, inoperable for a year and used as an RSF detention site and nearby Saudi hospital, indicated mass killings this week. About 460 people were reportedly killed in the Saudi hospital, according to the World Health Organization. I mean, this is a massacre. Israel lost 1,200 on October 7. Here's 500. Just with one series of mass executions. It says here, the accounts coming in are horrifying, said an aid worker whose organization has spoken to more than 100 people who managed to escape the city. One person told us three little children, all under the age of 4, clustered, crying around their mother's body. Another man said civilians were running from the west of town and they were being shot as they ran, just gunning down the civilians. One man said there was a body every 10 meters. One man described running past another man. Half his body had been blown away and he was begging for help. That is from the Washington Post. That's right there in D.C., right there in America's capital. Here's the report. And it's not pretty. And then you heard, I mean, just the spirit of division and strife and fighting, and we covered this fairly well last week. The MAGA movement, I mean, really being bitterly divided right now over whether to support Israel or not, whether to love Jews or hate Jews. And as you heard in the cold open, I mean, there's no let up. It's intensifying. Listen to Mark Levin speaking at that. It's a Republican Jewish coalition leadership event on Friday, clip 9.
You don't get to claim you're MAGA and America first when you're lining up with the Marxists and the Islamists and Hamas and the terrorists. That's not America first. That's sick. How are we going to attack the Mandamis and the Talibs and the Omars and the Sanders and the rest of them when in our own house, this poison is spreading? We've got to take care of business. We can fight the enemy on the other side. But the problem is, the more daunting problem, the more complicated problem is when they're in our house and they're trying to take over our house and they're burning down our house and they're destroying America First and they're destroying MAGA and they're destroying the Republican Party, which means they're destroying the country. Either speak up and stand out, but don't be a pretender. Don't be a pretender. We need help to deal with these people.
He's talking about the spread of hatred. He's talking about enemies from within. He's talking about cozying up to some of the most vicious enemies abroad, enemies of America, enemies of Jews. And he's right. He's right to call out Tucker Carlson. You know, as I was thinking about this morning, and my kids, I think, could tell you this, going back. This program started a little over 10 years ago. And a lot has happened since 2015. You know, that was the year President Trump came down the escalator. And that man right there that you just heard, he despised Donald Trump at that time. I mean, I had my questions about Trump's and Trump's background, his character, that sort of thing. And he was kind of an outsider. He wasn't a politician. And he had quite the reputation as a womanizer and that sort of thing. But just to think about commentators for a moment, you know, there was a period where, you know, I'd be shaving in the morning. This was back when I was shaving. And I had Mark Levin playing. And then there came a time where I was like, what happened? What happened here? Well, you know, I could say the same thing for Ben Shapiro, Tucker, certainly. I mean, I was a big fan in 2020. As he was exposing the Summer of Love. Showing you with video, with clips, that this is not a summer of love. This is a summer of violence and hatred and killing. And he was right. David French used to be a big fan of his writings. And then he decided he hated Donald Trump, and everything he wrote was written through that prism, Trump derangement syndrome. You could say the same for Bill Kristol. I mean, you go right down the line. I'm old enough to remember Bill O'Reilly. I used to really enjoy him, and then something happened. Something changed. And it wasn't just like an overnight thing with all these commentators. It happened gradually over time, or maybe they get it right over here on one subject, and then over here, it's just, what in the world are you thinking? Like Levin said there about Tucker. I mean, did something happen to your brain? Now, all of these individuals, I'm not trying to put them down. I'm just trying to highlight the fact that we are trying everything and it's not working. It is not working. It's like Isaiah 59 says, we're like blind men groping in the dark. We just can't figure it out. Even some of the best minds, even some of the most conservative minds, even today with the few that are left that speak, you know, fairly soundly, on most subjects, you almost wonder, okay, when is their change of thinking going to happen? And will it be swift? I mean, with Tucker, it's been pretty fast moving. Or will it be more gradual? I don't know. I mean, even Donald Trump, you go back and look at what we said in the lead up. We're coming up to the anniversary is tomorrow, right? The miraculous return of Donald Trump, it was prophesied. And for 4 years, we were there telling you it's going to happen, and we were telling you God intervened to protect him. We were telling you that God wouldn't let him get assassinated. I mean, my father said that directly. And then he comes back a year ago, and first thing my father says is, you better watch Germany. There's other, I mean, when we're told by Jesus to watch world events, we've got to see the big picture. And we can't just stop after one seemingly positive victory. Well, this is a victory for God, prophecy fulfilled. It was when Donald Trump came back. And then you hear some of the things he's saying now, even on the interview with CBS last night. And you think, wow. I mean, we are in for some kind of crash. Pride comes before the fall. the sins of our people. They're not being addressed. There's no national repentance. There's a lot of talk about religion. There's a lot of talk about peace. There's a lot of talk about bringing everyone together, bringing the world together. But then you just have to look at the facts on the ground. Look at Sudan. Look at Ukraine. Look at Hamas. Look at hostages being taken. Look at mass executions. Of course, there's a few positive things here and there. Just sealing the border has done so much to at least stop the bleeding. Sending in law enforcement in D.C. I mean, it has changed things for the better as far as crime goes. But these are just tiny, tiny steps of improvement. Step back and look at the big picture. Look at the world that you live in. And if you take an honest, hard, objective look at it, you know exactly why God inspired the Apostle Paul 2,000 years ago to describe it as an evil world. That's the truth. That's the truth of the Bible. It's an evil world. And we're struggling, striving, straining to try to do everything we can to just keep the evil in check and to talk to the murderous dictators or the terrorist organizations to try to, you know, make them come to their senses and appreciate the fact that we've got good deals for everybody. And the world as a whole, you know, it's pretty good overall. And we can fix the damage. I mean, did you know that a lot of people in the traditional Christian world, they think that Jesus Christ came to this earth 2,000 years ago to fix the damage, to save as many people as possible before it's too late? They completely misunderstood the purpose of his first coming. Mr. Armstrong lays all that out, by the way, in chapter 6 of Mystery of the Ages. He came to this earth the first time to qualify to replace Satan on the throne of this earth. He came to this earth to preach the good news gospel of the soon coming kingdom of God. He came to this earth to lay down his life as that lamb sacrifice, that blood sacrifice for the sins of mankind. He came to be resurrected from the dead, to ascend to heaven, to be our high priest and advocate. Just like the nobleman in the parable of the pounds, he went away to a far country, but he's coming back. He's coming back. And he also came in the first century to establish the foundation of the true church of God. And he started working with just a handful of disciples. And that church would go through seven eras, just as is described in Revelation 2 and 3. Over the course of 2,000 or so years, as God would call out a few to be trained as disciples or students of Jesus Christ so that they could rule and qualify the same way Jesus did and then rule with him in God's coming kingdom when salvation would then be opened up to all of mankind. It's a wonderful plan. Comes right out of the mind of God, and it gives everyone an opportunity. Jew, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, atheist. Once their minds are open to the truth, the wonderful world tomorrow. I've mentioned this book here because we need a positive, hopeful message, and this booklet contains one. It's a beautiful vision. And it's built on passage after biblical passage after biblical passage. God describes it, the coming world of tomorrow. The world today, well, verse 12 of Isaiah 59, "For our transgressions are multiplied before you, and our sins testify against us. For our transgressions are with us, and as for our iniquities, we know them." Isaiah says, "In transgressing and lying against the Lord and departing away from our God, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and uttering from the heart words of falsehood and judgments turned away backward, and justice stands afar off, and truth is fallen in the street, and equity cannot enter. It says in verse 15, truth fails, and he that departs from evil makes himself a prey. And the Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment, no judgment, no truth, just evil through and through. In that conference on Friday, Douglas Murray was asked about, he was asked about just the spread of Jew hatred and how dangerous this is. Again, this is something we've talked about at length on this show. But here's Doug Murray from Friday, clip 12.
This very week, you had a avowed anti-Semite, Fuentes, given platform where this is a guy who says Hitler was cool, has specifically said that Jews should be terminated if, you know, the in the next round of white nationalist leadership. And those views went unchallenged, which a number of people, speakers have talked tonight about this rise of anti-Semitism on the right. What's going on? Is this a little problem or is this a big problem that's growing?
It's a problem, and if it's not addressed now, it will grow. They're getting away with it now for the first time from the right because of the fact that the generation of Holocaust survivors is basically died out. These people did not dare do this in the face of the immovable object of the survivors.
Ah, yes, we've forgotten our history, even our recent history, from just 80, 85 years ago. And so we move on and we make statements today like, well, if we just had a Tucker podcast in 1938, then everyone could have understood each other, you see? Then you can sit down with, well, not Fuentes, but sit down with Hitler, sit down with Stalin. Let's see what they think. Let's try to make a deal and everyone will be happy. Well, they tried those things. They may not have had the podcasts, but they did try to sit down with the jihadists in suits, so to speak. And how'd that work for them? History is repeating itself, just as the Bible said it would. The Wall Street Journal says, the new right's new anti-Semites. An old political poison is growing on the new right, led by podcasters and internet opportunists who are preoccupied with the Jews. I mean, that's putting it nicely. They're preoccupied. Tucker sits down with Fuentes, as you just heard there, and just kind of nods in agreement. And as this journal piece points out, I mean, he sits down with Ted Cruz, and I mean, he's ready for battle. He's ready to expose Ted Cruz because he loves the Jews. And then with Fuentes, you just nod and you politely nod your head, I guess. And then come away from it and say, well, I mean, I'm not saying I agree with him, but, you know, we should at least talk to him. We should give him a platform. And then the Heritage Foundation, they come forward to defend not the Jewish state, not Israel or Bibi, but to defend Tucker. And by extension, Fuentes, even though the guy said, you know, we disagree strongly with a lot of things Fuentes says. But, you know, Tucker's not going to be, he's not going to be canceled. He's a good friend of ours. I mean, this is huge because Heritage Foundation, they're like one of the top conservative think tanks in D.C. And I mean, they're largely responsible for putting forward the list of Supreme Court nominees. So there's a lot of things at play here. President Trump hasn't, I mean, you kind of can read between the lines. I pressured Bibi. Oh, I did. You know, Hamas, hey, the peace deal, the ceasefire agreement, it's not like this tenuous, you know, short term. It's solid. It is solid. Well, what about Hamas? Hey, we could disarm them just like that if we had to. Let's talk about Bibi again. I pressured him. He did things I didn't like. At some point, you have to think that President Trump's going to come out with something much more definitive and strong and straight to the point. Look, this is where we stand with respect to Israel. Because right now you've got the commentators from every angle weighing in, and a lot of people are not happy, hurling accusations. Here's the Heritage president. We played the clip last week of him coming out and defending Tucker, and then here he is basically defending that on a talk show, clip 14.
Because we started the video by saying that we condemn anti-Semitism, that as you played, and thanks for doing it, we abhor so many things of what Nick Fuentes says. And yet, if we're actually going to appeal to his audience of millions of disaffected young men, the answer tactically is not to cancel him or to cancel Tucker. In other words, you can disagree with what he's saying, but what history has shown, especially recent history, given the power of media and especially social media, is that when you cancel those media figures and you're not engaging with the truly nefarious and sinister things that they're saying, their audience grows. And I can tell you, not just as the president of the Heritage Foundation and as an American, but as a dad of four of kids in that age range that might be susceptible to some of what Fuentes is saying, that we have to engage on all of these nefarious points. It's sort of ridiculous that we have to, right? But we have to in order to produce an aspirational vision for the future. And finally, I'll just sum up by saying, Dana, that at Heritage, for 52 years, we've attempted to take the various splintered factions, as you said, and put them together into a cohesive unit.
Talked about people canceling Fuentes. Do you think that criticism is cancellation?
No, I mean, criticism isn't cancellation, although some of the criticism about him, as I understand it, also went into the realm of saying in order to continue the criticism, he shouldn't have any platform. And that's precisely the kind of thing that, while I understand that on the substance of the arguments of what he's saying, tactically deeply worries me, because then the audience grows. And obviously, as conservatives who have the courage of our convictions, and at Heritage, I think we have all of the right policy answers to these problems, we ought to have the confidence to go engage those issues and hopefully begin to appeal that audience. That's ultimately the point. Well, but if we're going to actually correct the scourge of anti-Semitism, we've got to go convince those, unfortunately, millions of young men who find that appealing. I do believe that they're convincible. I believe that people like you, hopefully people like us at Heritage, and even people like Tucker might be able to play a role in that.
Do those things deserve a place in the conservative movement for the sake of debate? How do you handle that?
Oh, absolutely not. I want to be really clear. So I'm grateful for the follow-up question, because this gets into some of the tactics that we've been employing at Heritage. None of those ideas deserve sort of a place in the conservative movement. But the point is that they're not going away, that Fuentes has millions of people in his audience. And if we say we're not even going to talk about those ideas because they're so ridiculous, and they are ridiculous and nefarious, that doesn't mean that Fuentes or his audience or those ideas are going to go away.
So we have to engage. We've got to sit down and talk with him. We've got to hear him out. That's all we're doing. That's all Tucker's doing. Tucker lashed out at Ted Cruz because he didn't know the population of Ukraine. And then he sits down with Fuentes, anti-Jew, venomous hatred. We're just listening. That's the spirit of the peacemakers of our day. Just sit down and engage. I mean, this is an approach that Steve Witkoff would surely endorse. Sit down with Hamas. Sit down with Hamas's paymasters in Qatar. Sit down with Putin. Sit down with Iran, sit down with Xi, and just engage, dialogue, talk. And then if you do get a little worked up, I mean, reserve that for Bibi for sure. Because as Bannon said, everything the Bibi administration says is a lie. And then Tucker, the people I dislike the most, Christian Zionists. Where do you think this is leading? And then you've got religion woven into all of this. You talk about a recipe for disaster. The Wall Street Journal says, well, it just quotes some from Mr. Roberts. I forget his Kevin is his first name, the head of the Heritage Group. On Monday's Carlson's show, Fuentes assailed organized Jewry as the obstacle to American unity and these Zionist Jews as the impediment to the right's success, while calling himself a fan of Joseph Stalin. Even while toning it down for the largest audience he'll ever have, that was in Tucker's platform, Mr. Fuentes still came off as an internal mashup of the worst of the 20th century. Hitler admirer further on, and then quoting Tucker from a while back, I dislike the Christian Zionists more than anybody. The Journal says after the interview, Mr. Fuentes said in another broadcast that conservative Jewish commentators like Josh Hammer, Mark Levin, and Ben Shapiro, also frequent targets of Mr. Carlson's ire, will never be Americans and should get the bleep out of America and go to Israel. Well, isn't that interesting? Fuentes says this, which, as I said last week, is exactly what Amos 7 says. This religious advisor going head to head with God's servant, God's prophet, and saying, look, you're not real Americans. Why don't you get out and go to Israel? Go to Judah. If you love the Jews so much. It says here, how about Mr. Fuentes? Just further on, I'll give you the conclusion. The danger here goes beyond the podcast cabal and a misguided think tank leader. Mr. Roberts, always eager to say he knows what time it is, apparently thought this was the way to reach young men. We just have to reach out. I mean, look, Fuentes' followers, there's quite a few. And we've got to reach out to them and persuade them. And what did he say in that clip I just played for you? All the policy answers. Heritage Foundation has all the policy answers to these problems. We can solve anything. We know the answers. The confidence of these people. I mean, we will reach out and engage with anyone except God. We don't want God really involved. We want God. We'll talk about religion and how we love Jesus, but we really don't want to engage with God. We really don't want God's perspective. We don't want to read into Isaiah 59 and 1 Thessalonians 5. I mean, in my case, I can't stop reading 1 Thessalonians 5. I read it several times on the show last week, and then I read it again Sabbath morning. Read the whole chapter. It's incredibly uplifting and inspiring, and it also gives you the perfect snapshot of where we are in the world today. And then what to do about it, and how to stay awake and to be sober, spiritually speaking. There are times to get up and to watch world events. It's so easy to slumber away and to sleep. Even Jesus, that final night of his life, he said to his disciples, couldn't you watch with me for an hour at least? I mean, given where we are, given the momentous nature of these events that are transpiring, sometimes we need to forsake a little bit of sleep to just get our minds in alignment with God's. But the problem with most human beings is we give up sleep to indulge in carnal impulses, carnal desires, the works of the flesh, worldly pursuits. And all of those things just kind of numb us spiritually to where we're not really sharp. And we don't really discern the signs of the times. You look at the signs, they're all around us. And it should be obvious. God tried to make it that way for us, but man is hard-hearted and stubborn. He says here, the WSJ, or the editorial board of Wall Street Journal, it says, if conservatives and Republicans don't call out this poison in their own ranks before it corrupts more young minds, the right and America are entering dangerous territory. But don't worry, we've got pieces of paper that suggest that peace is breaking out. Now, the handwriting is on the wall. It certainly is. I saw this story was in at Fox News over the weekend. But it says here, Joe Rogan says he enjoys going to church, admires Jesus Christ, and benefits from faith or benefits of faith. So Joe Rogan, he believes. He's a believer. He says there's a lot of atheists and secular people that just like to dismiss Christianity as being foolish. You know, it's just fairy tales. I hear that amongst, you know, self-professed intelligent people. Like, it's a fairy tale. I don't know if it's true. I think there's more to it. I think it's history, but I think it's a confusing history. It's a confusing history because it was a long time ago, and it's people telling things in an oral tradition, then writing things down in a language that you don't understand, in the context of a culture that you don't understand. And I think there's something to what they're saying. Well, there's no offense, but there's not a lot there to really sink your teeth into. Paul said there's a simplicity in Christ. Paul was about to be executed. And he said to Timothy, you know, make sure you get the cloak, you get, you know, some of these other belongings, and especially the parchments. In other words, especially the letters that have been canonized by God. All scripture is given by inspiration of God. God put the Bible together. And it's time for human beings to stop attending to what some man says about the Bible and go and read it for yourself. Just 1 Thessalonians 5 is not that long. You could probably read it in about 3-4 minutes. I mean, I would encourage you to take longer so that you can stop and think and ponder, you know, Selah. But read it for yourself. Don't take my word for it. See what Paul said about the last days. I mean, the whole first letter, he's talking about the return of Christ. And then the second letter, I mean, I'm kind of simplifying it here, but in the second letter, some of the brethren had stopped working or doing really anything of value because they thought, well, Jesus is going to return any moment. And Paul said, look, don't listen to what some man says to you about the return of Christ. Just know what I've told you. I preached this when I was there, and now I'll repeat it again in 2 Thessalonians 2. Before he comes back, this, this, and this will happen. And well, it's happened. That's how close we are. And yet at the same time, Paul said, now get to work and make sure you're found doing. Well, Jesus said that specifically in Luke 21. You want to be working right up to the return of Christ, working for God most especially, engaging with God above all, bringing God into the center above all, supporting God's work and so on. Here in the midst of all this turmoil, all of this danger, in the last days, perilous times shall come, Paul said. As it happens, you have a lot of talk about religion as well. I mean, even individuals like Joe Rogan, he's seen the light. He's coming around. I mean, this is I think someone who not that long ago would have been considered ultra-liberal. And, I talked earlier about all these commentators that have just had these, it's like they've had a mind change almost. And in some cases, maybe they've had their minds open to, okay, I think I see what the dear leader was doing all those years. I mean, President Trump said in the interview last night, Obama was a terrible president. And I'll say it when no one else will, because everybody else wants to be politically correct, or they don't want to be accused of being a racist. A few have awakened, in large part because of content like what you have in America Under Attack, where Obama's exposed. Lots of mind changes all around. People just all over the map. I mean, something for everyone. Just the way the devil wants it. Every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. And what does the proverb say? There is a way that seems right to man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. That's a pretty big statement from Proverbs 14 and verse 12. That is a huge statement. There's a way that seems right, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Just coming back to, you know, how religion has been woven into all of this turmoil, this dangerous time that we're in. Is there really a religious revival? The next trumpet that we've got coming out is going to have a lot to say about religion today, the traditional Christian religion in particular. I think it might be one of the strongest trumpets we've ever produced. I'm not sure which month it is, but I think maybe the November issue, November, December. If you aren't a trumpet subscriber, call our operators today and make sure you get a free one-year subscription. There's no cost, no obligation, and request the next issue, just in case you're put into the database a little bit too late to get that first one. But there's an article in there on America at the Crossroads, and it talks a lot about Amos 7 and the Jeroboam administration with the king-like powers, and I've got clips to bear that out, but I don't have time. I'm already out of time almost. But it also talks about the king's chapel, the king's religion, and the point my father makes there is that, you know, it's the king's religion. It's not just a specific denomination or this group is supporting Jeroboam or religion is helping Jeroboam. It's the king's religion. And we have to look at everything that's happening, this divide over Israel, the Jews, and so on. And know that in the end, the way that Jeroboam goes is the way that religion goes. And as my father says in that article, the problem with it, I mean, there's more than one, but the problem with it is it gets religious people to look to a man instead of God. True religion is always, always pointing people to God. John the Baptist did it when he prepared the way before Jesus Christ. And then when Jesus Christ began his ministry, he said, I am here to declare the Father in heaven. He said in John 8, I can of my own self do nothing. Nothing. This, what you're hearing, what you're seeing in my ministry, it is of God. When Jesus was about to be crucified the night before, he cried out to God all night long. And God sustained him, and God led him, God empowered him. God guided him right through the most excruciating trial of his short life. And it was short. It was cut short. Because as John 3 says, men love darkness. Jesus was a light. But this world loves darkness. They love stumbling around, groping in the dark, trying everything, maybe changing their, or getting behind this political move. That doesn't work. Let's go over here and try this. But on the whole, just do what seems right. Every man, just do what seems right. And hopefully we can somehow make sense of this and solve all the problems of this world. God's gospel message, the one Jesus proclaimed, the good news of the soon coming kingdom of God. I mean, the message there is this world is not going to be able to solve its problems, but God will. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.